this isn't just about horsepower.
It's about the culture behind the wheel.
From the latest automotive headlines,
to the machines we love, to the music, movies, and moments driving in the lifestyle.
This is Driveline with Justin Basic. If it's got an engine, an attitude, or a story worth telling, we're on it. Call in. Leave your take. 833-3DL-SHOW. This is Driveline. So let's strap in and let's roll.
It's been about 10 years since I heard that music. It goes back to my old YouTube days. Don't bother looking them up. The videos are already hidden. This is Driveline. I'm Justin Basak, and this is what is known as a pilot episode. So, what could you expect from Driveline? Well, I already know. If you're listening right now, you either know me as your child or grandchild. You went to high school with me. You're a good friend of mine from Cars and Coffee. Or you know me as Justin the Engineer. So a little bit about my backstory. 15-year radio veteran. Never really on air, but something I always wanted to do. Probably haven't really been, aside from what I've done recently, which we'll get into, I haven't really done any on-air work since college. But I worked for WLS in Chicago for about 4 years before I moved to Los Angeles. And while I was there, I was the producer of a show called Drive Chicago, which was hosted by Paul Bryan. Paul Bryan was a great mentor to me. He really got my interest in cars from beyond, I only like American cars, I only like trucks, I'm only going to drive stuff with a V8. He kind of branched me into a wider array of cars. And he was always a really good friend of me. Sadly, we lost Paul a couple of years ago in 2024. So this show is kind of in tribute of him. But in Chicago, I worked with major personalities. I worked with Steve Dahl, Jonathan Brandmeier, a bunch of people who, if you mentioned my name to them, they probably have no idea who you're talking about. And then in 2017, I moved to Los Angeles and got an engineering job. And that's when you started to know me as Justin the Engineer, who works at KROQ, K-Rock. So, the name Driveline, other than being part of a car, is a tribute to both Drive Chicago and my K-Rock heritage with Loveline. And it's a show that's, I call it loosely about cars. It's a car-themed show. We're going to mostly talk about cars, but it's anything I want to talk about and anything you want to talk about. Mostly things that I enjoy. And it's not a big deep dive technical show. I mean, we're not going to focus on a car a week like so many other podcasts do and give you 0 to 60 times and give you quarter mile times and talk about the cornering and stuff. We can get into that if you want, but that is not my focus. That's not my expertise. While I'm a good radio engineer, I am not a mechanical engineer and none of that stuff interests me. So we're more talking about how cars fit into society. Popular culture, cars and movies, cars and music. It's an everybody show. Like, the goal for Driveline is if you like cars, you're going to enjoy it. If you don't like cars, hopefully you like cars by the end of it. And if you hate cars, still listen, send me hate mail. I'm all for it. So yeah, this is an open forum, and I want to hear from you, and which is why I set up a voicemail line, 833-3DL-SHOW. You can also reach out to me on Instagram at driveline.show, and I also have an email, justin@drivelineshow.com.
What up, Justin? Just making sure your line works. Okay, I can't wait to hear your broadcast. Bye.
So if you want that to be you, 833-3DL-SHOW, leave me a voicemail. I'm going to listen to all of them. We're going to play all of them. that's the best way we can connect. So, I spend a lot of time looking at car auctions. Like, that's my leisure activity. It's like doom scrolling, but looking at very problematic cars for sale. And when I buy cars, the way I justify it, because if I could buy every car that crossed my mind for under $1,000, I would have them. So to rationalize it, I always make the cars. They have to have a good story, a story I can share with people, and something that's worth preserving. A good example of that is the car I bought, the Fiat 850. Affectionately known now as Operazione Dynamite. And I know a lot of people listening right now are fine. They were waiting for me to say it. Clocked in. What time are we at? 5 minutes in and Operazione Dynamite. Clock it. So, the story of that car, and I went into it on my Instagram a little bit. There's a company called Cinema Vehicles in Santa Clarita. And naturally, they provide cars to movies. And about a year ago, they dumped like half their inventory through an auction I always follow called JJ Kane. And naturally I was looking through all these cars because normally the way JJ Kane works is they normally get the surplus vehicles from cities, construction companies and stuff. So that's where I get a lot of my police cars from. My LAFD Suburban came through there. It's mostly government surplus, but they were partnering up with Cinema Vehicles. They promoted a special auction that was all movie cars. They didn't share what any movies were from, so you kind of had to figure it out from yourself. There was a lot of stuff there from the Fallout show. Some of them still had the graphics on them. Then there was some... I think it was a Mitsubishi or Toyota van from the old Drive Time commercials. It was a bunch of random stuff. And I came across, they had it mislabeled. They labeled it as a Fiat Alice, which was the tractor division. But there was this little Fiat I'd never seen before in any of my local car show perusing or anything. Through the use of Google Lens, I figured out it was a Fiat 850 Coupe. And I thought that was cool, and I sent it to my friend, and I was like, hey, what do you know about these? And I'm like, oh yeah, I've seen a few people who have them. Kind of put it out of my mind. And there was some other stuff they had that I was looking at, but it was always in the background. I thought that'd be cool to have if it went for cheap. Maybe a weekend later, I was watching one of my favorite movies, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I noticed in that movie, there was a car that looked awfully familiar, and it was an 850, just like the one in at the auction. So I went and I looked back at it, and then I made a connection. While the one that you see the whole car in the movie was not the car they used, the interior shots was the car they used, or at least I suspected that's what it was. So now I really wanted this thing. And $4,000 later, I was taking it home. And it runs and drives. I don't take it out that much because it has a charging issue, but I like to find cars that have a good story. And the story continued on that one somewhat recently because about 3 weeks ago, I noticed my dog was sniffing around the hood of the car. So I opened it up, and a bunch of her toys were shoved in the car has a trunk in the front. So the little front trunk had a bunch of her toys shoved in it. And I also noticed around the toys, there was some grass and some droppings. And I'm like, ugh. So I go and I open up the car. The whole floor of the car that was sealed up was full of grass and rat poop and a bunch of other stuff. The carpet was shredded. So I had to pull all the carpet out. I pulled the seats out, sanitized it. So the car's in rougher shape than when I got it. The damage isn't that bad, but the reason the rats got into the car was Fiat 850s are notorious for rust. And the backseat floor pans of that car, completely gone. When I lifted up the carpet, I was looking at the driveway. Like, it's you could fit your whole foot through it if you sat back there. So, I was always going to do this, but now I want to move it up, and the priority is that car needs a full, proper restoration. And I think I came up with a good solution on how to do this, so I'm going to be making merchandise, Operazione Dynamite merch, enamel pins, stickers, what have you, and all the proceeds I made enamel pins before, and I gave them away for free, but all the proceeds from these are going to go to giving that car proper restoration. And I think that'll be really worth it in the end. So that's going to be one of Driveline's, let's say, 2-year projects. Merch coming soon. Hopefully by summer. What else have I been up to the last 4 months since most people have seen me? So, another car that I had a good story that I was looking for. There was a 1964 Citroën Ami on Copart. So, what's a Citroën Ami? Because I never heard of them either. Most people are familiar with the Citroën Deux-Chevaux. Even if you don't know the name, 2CV Deux-Chevaux. Even if you don't know the name, you've seen them. Every French movie, every French character, they either put them in... If they're rich, they have a Citroën DS. If they're poor, they have a Deux-Chevaux. And a Deux-Chevaux, it was basically the Beetle of France. Little 2-cylinder air-cooled engine, mostly designed for farmers to drive. They had really good off-road capabilities for the bad roads in France. They were developed after World War II for a recovering economy. They're basically the people's car of France. The Ami was one step up from that. They had a pagoda roof, an inward slanted rear window, which gave the back seat more headroom and the trunks the ability to open further. They made over 1 million units, but very, very few of them wound up in the U.S. And like all Citroëns, it had a really soft suspension and tight maneuvering, so... Fun little car to drive around. So I saw one of these on Copart. And once again, I sent it to my friend Henry. And I was like, hey, are you familiar with these? And he was like, oh yeah, they're kind of cool. So put it in the back of my head. And just like last time, it was growing on me. But I couldn't justify just buying this car for the hell of it to buy it. So I had to figure out what's its story. So just on a hunch, I took the serial number from the car and I threw it in Google. Usually that's not enough for Google to make sense of anything, but like I put it in the history report. I didn't get anything in the history report, so I'm just going to Google the serial number. And what came up was actually pretty interesting is that the car was a Mullen car. So what does a Mullen car mean? Well,
we're going to bring in Merle Mullen, who can talk about what people can expect when they come to the museum.
Here at the museum, you can expect to encounter treasures that you will never see anywhere else, because here we offer the best collection of beautifully restored French automobiles from an era that was the Art Deco period, when cars were bespoke individual cars and not made to drive people to Whole Foods.
Right, just these commuter cars that we're used to driving now. I mean, these are works of art here.
Yes, these were collectibles, and they were collected as pieces of art on wheels.
Yes, and they have been restored. I mean, Sparkle's showing us a lot of these vehicles that are on display here. This is from your personal collection. How long did it take to acquire this and to open up the museum here?
Years. Many, many, many years of this passion, and finally it came to fruition.
And just a short year after that CBSLA interview was recorded, the museum sadly closed. The Mullen Museum was a privately owned automotive museum in Oxnard, established in 2010. It displayed the personal car collection of businessman and philanthropist Peter W. Mullen. Museum had a large collection of vintage Bugattis and other 20th century French cars. Many of the cars fully restored and able to be driven, while others were left purposely unrestored to preserve their history. So that's what's interesting about this. I got to visit the museum one of the last days they were open, and they had a great collection of what I call Justin Spec Bugattis, because they were like destroyed. Like they looked like they were pulled out of the woods. Absolute barn finds. But man, like to me, that's way cooler than a restored one. And what's interesting too is the AMI, when it was listed, because I'm going to get ahead of myself, all these cars went to auction. And when the AMI was listed, it was a non-runner. So purposefully unrestored. After the founder's death in September 2023, the museum closed on February 10th, 2024. That was the last day when I went there. Many of the cars from the collection were subsequently auctioned off. So, a good portion of that collection went, some of it went to the Peterson, some of it went to a few other collections, but a lot of them went to a Gooding & Company auction. And that's how I found out that this was the same car. Because the auction from Gooding & Company was still up, and the serial number was on it. So suddenly I had my story. Gooding & Company holds the unique honor and privilege of presenting selections from the Mullen Collection auction in person at the Mullen Automotive Museum in Oxnard. Respected visionary Peter Mullen was deeply revered in the collector car world, not only for his world-renowned collection consisting of the finest and most exquisite French and European automobiles, but also for his enduring legacy as a philanthropist and distinguished businessman. Mr. Mullen's appreciation, enthusiasm, and knowledge of the pre-war French and Art Deco cars were simply unprecedented in the industry and beyond. This auction offers a selection of lots without reserve, providing a brilliant selection of automotive history for every level of collector. That's from the Gooding auction page. So, how did this prestigious collectible car wind up at Copart? So, the auction was listed because Copart sells mostly salvage title vehicles, but there's some clean ones. This was unfortunately a salvage title. The damage reported was burn. It had appeared there was a small fire in the engine bay. And I mean small, not even like an exaggeration. Like most of the photos from the Copart auction were identical to the Gooding auction, except for one minute detail. One, the fuel lines were gone. And two, the battery connectors were gone. And from the look of the charring, the fire started somewhere around the battery. So I take it the person bought this car, probably used it 2-3 times, had a small fire under the hood, and then they just cashed it in for the insurance money. Which is a shame. Because the whole point of the Gooding auction was to get the vehicles in the hands of the people who would preserve them, but wasn't the case in this one. So anyway, I was intrigued, and I spent all of December and most of January just, when is this auction going to happen? When is this auction going to happen? Because the way Copart works is everything is listed as future, and then you find out 2 days before that the auction is Wednesday or something like that. So eventually the auction came, and there was way more interest in this car than I thought. And I got in a three-way bidding battle with someone else in California and someone in Texas. And I did not deposit enough money down to bid over $4,000, and I was beaten by one bid, and I'm still mad about it. So, did not get that car, but stories for the next one. Hopefully I see that car again. I have Google alerts out on it, so wherever you are in Texas of me, I will find you. 8333-DL-SHOW, this in from Fresno. Appreciate everyone chiming in. So, I made an April Fool's joke a couple days ago that I think went over most people's heads. But the few people that got it, they knew what was up. So, Magnus Walker had an auction of his. People were thinking it was his whole car collection, but it was like half his car collection. So, if you don't know who Magnus Walker is, Magnus Walker, born July 7, 1967, British-American fashion designer and car collector, emigrated to the U.S. in 86 at 19 years old. He eventually established the Serious Clothing brand, which was sold at stores like Hot Topic. He also had his own store in the Melrose area. He was fascinated with Porsche since childhood and started collecting and customizing vintage Porsches, mostly air-cooled 911s. After the documentary Urban Outlaw about his life came out, he became one of the most visible faces of the Porsche and car collecting scene. He has since been featured in a multitude of media, such as the Joe Rogan Experience, Jay Leno's Garage, and the 2015 video game Need for Speed, and hopefully Driveline. So this from RM Sotheby's, dive into the fascinating personal collection of legendary car customizer and style icon Magnus Walker, from early short wheelbase cars that made his name to the brawling turbo of the following decade and the front engine Porsche of the 80s and 90s. 159 lot collection spans nearly 50 years of automotive history, highlighting the incredible career of one of Los Angeles car scene's most celebrated modifiers. So my April Fool's joke was a play on this description, and it was about my cars. A few people got it. A few people thought I was actually having an exhibit or something. Either way, thanks for your support. Magnus is, he's got to be one of the most approachable people in the car community. He's a good acquaintance of mine. Always stops and talks with me at events when I see him. He's one of the nicest guys around. He'll just give you a copy of his book, Dirt Don't Slow You Down. I highly recommend reading it. He's always giving out Hot Wheels. He's always taking pictures with people. I can't say enough good things about the guy. So the auction ended this past week. And here's Magnus on the closing of it.
Hey, top of the morning to you and greetings from my downtown LA Arts District garage on the day after yesterday's big RM Sotheby's auction. I personally want to thank anyone that got out and bid and bought something yesterday, whether it was a car, a part, or a piece of memorabilia. It is much appreciated. Yesterday was a pretty exciting day watching those lots sell, and today is sort of the aftermath where now I've got to figure out what's next.
As much as I love auctions, I actually did not bid on any lots in that one. But since the conclusion of it, the whole community has been giving their thoughts on the results of this auction.
All right, so I see people online posting about this. I'm going to give you an insider take. I have not seen this car drive since 2018. I've seen this one drive a few times. This one has not moved since at least 2018. This one I've seen out a few times, maybe once. This car has been parked since longer than 2018. Never seen this one on the road. I think this was Hannah's old one, which used to be stored back behind this in the secret garage in there. I've never seen this one driven. Never seen this one driven since at least 2018. That one never moved as long as I knew him. That one's been out on the road like three times. That one's been out on the road a few times. This one hasn't moved at all. I've never seen this one out of the garage. This one's been out a few times. That one's been out. And yeah.
That's my old friend Taylor, who goes by Analog Speed. It's probably one of my favorite takes on this. And make of it what you will. I'm not going to fault anyone for not driving their cars. I'm guilty of that myself. I know everyone's like, drive your shit. And sometimes you just collect.
Here's my summary of the Magnus Walker Outlaw Collection. So he did really well, actually, when you look at all the cars. These some ones that just hit a home run for like this 66 911. It was a nice car. I did like this car. But like this one for a 65 911 225, it's not like a real nice restored car. You're buying a Magnus Premium in there. That was pretty cool. That's a rare car though, 76 27 Carrera. This one right here, I think he hit it out. I don't know this at all. 924 Turbo. These things are kind of worthless, but it's got a Hulbert Racing wide body. I don't know how much that adds to it, but wow, that 77 grand is a huge number. This 68S is like, whoa, $308,000. That's what a perfectly restored car would bring, and this is not a perfectly restored car.
That is Mark Allen 911 on Instagram. This is from Motor One. Porsche auction brings big bucks. Magnus Walker's Outlaw collection outperforms pre-auction estimates. RM Sotheby's saw $2 million in sales across 160 lots, which includes 16 complete cars. Magnus Walker recently cleared house by unloading tons of Porsche cars, merchandise, parts, and other associated items he's collected over the years. In total, the Outlaw collection featured 16 complete cars among 160 items for sale. Big ticket item proved to be Magnus's 1967 911S, an excellent example bearing Magnus Walker touches, such as 1552 wheels, contrasting color hood, and numbers matching yet modified 2.3 liter flat six engine. Pre-auction estimates pegged the value between $150,000 and $200,000, yet this one managed to go for a fairly staggering $308,000. There's also a 911S 2.4 liter engine, which sold for $27,600, just the engine. And someone even paid $3,360 for a pair of Magnus Walker signed Nike Dunk sneakers. Now, I remember when those sneakers came out, and I was not aware of Magnus's hype at the time. I thought I could just go and pick them up later for $120 retail. Mm-mm-mm. But I eventually got a pair, and I only had to pay $350 for mine. So, the least expensive item, a set of 911 pistons that sold for $48. You can head to RM Sotheby's to see the complete auction results. So, some of my takeaways from this. Things that I found interesting. The cheapest car that sold was the 87 Porsche 944, which sold for just under $10,000 at $9,900. So, anyone who, for reasonable money, wanted a Magnus Walker car, that was the one for you. The 1968 Porsche 911 Urban Outlaw Starter Kit sold for $66,000, which this was a fully disassembled 911, which came with a few Magnus Walker custom items and I think a pair of those sneakers as well. I don't know if that car had a pan. It didn't look like it did. It looked like it was mostly body kits, but it might have been a full car. But then the question is that person going to build the car? Or is that person going to leave it as kind of the art piece that it was presented at, all spread out about like a... It looked like a full-size model kit, which is really cool. I'd be inclined to do that because I'm weird like that, but it would also be fun to put it together. Some of the memorabilia I was looking at. There was a Jägermeister shot chiller with Hobart's rocks glasses and a 1/18 scale model of a 934 that sold for $990. There was a collection of Hot Wheels toys and model cars, mostly Magnus Walker branded, that sold for $2,520. So this one I actually had my eye on that I was planning on bidding on. There was mobile acrylic letters sign. It was just M-O-B-I-L, like you see on the gas station, that sold for $1,020. This one I actually would have paid this much for. There was a collection of vintage signs which sold for $372. That had a really cool vintage-looking Pabst Blue Ribbon sign, among a few other tobacco and I think it was tobacco, and there was another beer. There was a couple other beer signs, and there was an Exxon sign in there that was kind of, it was on the small side, so it was easy to present. That was actually a good deal. A pair of Durasig traffic signal lights sold for $420. That was highway robbery. And the other thing I had my eye on, which was, it sold for crazy money. I saw one of these on Marketplace for $1,200, and I thought that was too much. But the Ugly Duckling Rent-A-Car acrylic sign sold for $7,500. And there was a cool Red Bull gas pump refrigerator that was withdrawn before the auction ended. But the reason I didn't bid on any of this is because my enthusiasm fizzled when this popped up on my Instagram.
The property features an extensive assortment of authentic railroad artifacts like original crossing signals, bells, signage, industrial pieces, and they all capture the history and craftsmanship of early rail systems. At the center of this property, it's a nearly 100-foot-long train open for a walkthrough. Each rail car presents a different collection, ranging from vintage tools, mechanical equipment, antiques, artwork, and unique one-of-a-kind finds. Beyond the train, the grounds include workshops and storage spaces filled with decades of collected items, machinery, parts, signage, and carefully preserved pieces that reflect a lifetime of work and passion. Outdoors, you'll find vintage vehicles and additional industrial artifacts all set against the scenic backdrop of the Santa Paula River. We invite you to explore, discover, and take home a piece of history.
Absolutely amazing estate sale in Santa Paula. Like, this was literally like what I fantasize about going to. And I picked up a few cool things from there. I got a 60s era Dr. Pepper clock, two real actual railroad signals, two traffic signals, a 1960s advert for the Engineer Bill show on Channel 9 in Los Angeles, a couple of General Motors locomotive pressure gauges, and a couple of license plates and other things. So I got a pretty good haul from that. I went two different days, and I spent about $1,000 there. So for what I would have paid for one thing from Magnus's auction, I got a pretty good lot. So I'm happy. But the owner of that house, Vernon Peterson, is literally living my dream of having a plot of land in the country with a caboose, a passenger car, and just a bunch of junk all over the place. He had a bunch of really cool cars, too. He was selling an old Corvette. He had this German military Jeep thing. It was like a DKW. All of it out of my price range, but I really like that whole lifestyle of like American picker style. The guy was just retired firefighter, had a back lot that was like down a little private road, full of stuff. The estate sale lasted 4 days and it was always crowded. So one last thing I wanted to mention, and this isn't a Disney themed podcast, but this is a very important part of Disney and LA history that could potentially disappear very soon. And I haven't heard anyone mentioning this yet. So, if you're a big fan of animation, you're probably familiar with Ward Kimball, but if you're not, he was an animator for Disney during the Golden Era. He worked on Pinocchio, he created Jiminy Cricket, Fantasia, Cinderella, Alice in Wonderland, created Tweedledee and Tweedledum, the Walrus, the Cheshire Cat, the Mad Hatter, the Hare, so all the very classic Disney characters this guy was behind. So he had a property in San Gabriel. He and his wife moved there in the 1930s, back when there was nothing around. And he was a big railroad enthusiast. So much like our friend Vernon up in Santa Paula, he built a barn. He had trains there. A little train station that came from, it was a movie set that he moved there. And he actually had these trains running, and he would have people in the neighborhood come out and ride these steam engines around his yard. It was like 500 feet of track. And Ward Kimball is also credited with helping Walt Disney for the inspiration to install the Disneyland Railroad at Disneyland. And Ward Kimball partially constructed Walt Disney's personal 7 1/4 gauge live steam backyard Curwood Pacific Railroad. So Disneyland wouldn't have trains without Ward Kimball's property. Kimball's Grizzly Flats train station served as the model for the Disneyland Frontier train station. As a tribute to Kimball, engine number 5 of the Disneyland Railroad is named the Ward Kimball. So, why this is important right now? Well, this property in San Gabriel just went up for sale. And when I say up for sale, I mean it's already contingent as of, what is today, March 3rd. So, the address, 8910 Arundale Avenue, San Gabriel, California. I'm going to dox it because it's already been doxed if you research enough. Asking price, $5.29 million. So this is the listing that Zillow has right now. This is the description. Exceptional development opportunity on approximately 1.7 acres in the county area. This expansive parcel features approximately 200 feet of frontage on Arundale Avenue with additional access from Camino Real Avenue, offering outstanding flexibility for future development. This is a rare once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to acquire a property of this size and configuration. This lot may be suitable for subdivision into multiple single-family lots or the creation of a planned unit development subject to buyer verification and approvals. The existing residence offers 3 bedrooms, 2.5 bathrooms, and approximately 3,200 square feet of living space. This is in contrast to a previous LoopNet listing that describes it as such. A once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to acquire a piece of Grizzly Flats Railroad and Disney history. This unique offering presents a rare chance to own a treasured piece of Southern California history. Known as part of the legendary Grizzly Flats Railroad and tied closely to the legacy of Disney enthusiast. They say Disney enthusiast, but he was an employee. Disney enthusiast Ward Kimball. This property is iconic in the area and deeply beloved by the community. For years, the Kimball family hosted an annual train ride through Grizzly Flats, creating cherished memories for generations. So, I assume this listing was from a time it didn't sell, because there is no recent transfer of ownership of this property. I think the last time it was transferred was shortly after Betty and Ward passed, around 2009, when they took the trains off the property. But clearly the angle of selling it for historical purposes did not fly. So it's unfortunately going to become a bunch of ugly gray developments on top of each other. Unless this contingent buyer is actually someone who cares. This is from the LA Times back in May 12, 2007. Grizzly Flats Railroad steam engines traveled for 70 years along a 500-foot stretch of rails next to the San Gabriel home of Betty and Ward Kimball. Along the way, the Kimball's picturesque narrow-gauge line helped inspire Walt Disney to build the famous passenger train system that circles Disneyland. Now, though, its locomotives, vintage cars, and caboose have been hauled away, and workers have finished pulling out the steel rails and wooden ties. Soon, the antique-looking Grizzly Flats train depot will be dismantled. The old train barn and firehouse will be demolished. So, what's interesting about this is the train barn and the firehouse are still there. I know the Grizzly Flats depot was given to another Disney employee after it left there, and he has it on his railroad upstate, but every Disney employee has a railroad. I should work for them. The barn and the firehouse are still there on this property, which is why I was very interested in seeing the whole thing preserved as one piece. It's an emotional thing, but it has to be done, said John Kimball, the couple's 66-year-old son. We grew up here. When I was a little kid, I didn't know until I was in the sixth grade that it was unusual to have a railroad in your backyard. When I went to Temple City High School, I used to have parties in the caboose. This goes on more to talk about Ward Kimball's credits, as we already mentioned. Kimball was a lifelong train fan. On his first date with Betty, he had taken her to a rail yard to measure a boxcar. He and his new wife purchased 2.5 acres of a San Gabriel orange grove and were preparing to build a home in 1937 when he decided to buy a surplus train car to house his growing model train layout. For $50, he bought an abandoned narrow-gauge passenger coach, used on the 3-foot-wide track instead of the standard 4 foot and 8.5 inches that Southern Pacific had operated in the Owens Valley. A year later, he bought a similar-sized 1881 steam engine that was being scrapped by the Nevada Central Railroad. Later, he would also acquire a 1906 boxcar and caboose, a 1917 gondola, and a 1915 stock car, along with a small 1907 switch engine used at a Hawaiian sugar plantation. Now, I found evidence online of what he was making at the time, and adjusted for inflation, I make more than him. So I don't know why I don't have a 2.5 acres and collection of trains as much as I really want to. The weekend steam-ups, as the Kimballs called them, attracted crowds. Workers and executives from Hollywood film studios often wrangled invitations, as did neighbors. You'll pull in the driveway and see all this train stuff, said Bob Credle, who was 9 and living in Arcadia, when his next-door neighbor, a friend of the Kimballs, invited him to tag along for a steam-up. Young Credle ended up helping toss wood into the huffing steam engine's firebox, and a lifelong appreciation of trains and an eventual career was set in gear. I was never exposed to electric trains as a boy, but when I wanted to play with trains, I'd go to the Kimballs, said Credle, who supplies vintage trains for movie productions. So this had a big influence in the community. For decades, the Kimballs regularly hosted friends and other train lovers who delighted in riding the rails next to Arundale Avenue. One frequent visitor was Disney, who hired Kimball in 1934. At a backyard party in 1945, Kimball gave Disney a chance to take the throttle and operate the 1881 locomotive that Kimball had dubbed the Emma Nevada. That's when the Disneyland Railroad was born, according to Smetlak, a Woodland Hills resident, who serves as the vice president of collections for the Orange Empire Railway Museum in Riverside County. Disney's eyes and his grin got big as he nudged the locomotive to life, and that moment that he decided was... It was that moment that he decided that the trains in the park he was planning someday had to be real steam trains. So, this was a big deal. And we have some audio from... Where's cut eight? This is from Tomorrow with Tom Snyder in 1978, and we can hear a little bit from Ward himself on his trains.
Let me take a little stroll back to the engine house and see what you
I'll
got
bring
back
my
there.
Oil
All right,
kit.
Bring the oiler along. Now, what can we expect back here?
Well, we've got an old parlor car from 1880, and we have an 1881 Baldwin coal burner. Ran on the Nevada Central.
This is the big one, huh?
Yes, it ran on the Nevada Central Railroad. And this we restored way back in the 1940s. Wow. And we haven't run it for a long time. Why? Because now we have 14 neighbors.
As you said, you got the neighbors now.
Yeah, and we got all this coal smoke, and they complain about getting their drapes dirty.
I didn't know that on the headlights of old locomotives they had bare-breasted women.
Well, that's a painting I did. That's my old art school style.
Did you put that up there?
Yeah.
You rake, you.
Each side is a different painting, and I try to paint
them. Well, let's take a look at those. Are there any more like those?
The one on the other side is better.
Oh, no, we can't.
I'll show it to you after the show.
All right, do it privately.
As he grew older, maintenance of the rolling stock became harder. Kimball donated most of it to the Orange Empire Museum, along with the money to build an engine house to store them. He said it was close enough that I could still have a little fun with it. He said as the Emma Nevada was hauled away in late 1992, John Kimball and sisters Kelly of Altadena and Chloe of Tahunga at first were disappointed. We were shocked. At the time, we thought of the Grizzly Flats Railroad as a family thing. I ran that sugar plantation locomotive for 50 years, said Kimball, himself a retired animation director who lives in Pasadena. I'd always dreamed that maybe the state would take it over as a museum, but now we know it was the right thing to do. We could see it deteriorating as none of us could really take care of it. The caboose and its wood-burning pot-bellied stove that John Kimball partied around as a teenager was donated to the California State Railroad Museum in Sacramento. The Chloe locomotive and the last of its cars were turned over to the Orange Empire Museum several months ago. The Grizzly Flats Railroad track was pulled up 2 weeks ago. The old depot was offered to the Orange Empire Museum, but was rejected because of the cost required to convert it from a flimsy-built movie prop into a structure open to the public. Instead, it's being given to collector John Lasseter, a Sedona resident who is the chief creative officer at Pixar and Disney Animation Studios. So, I don't know. Maybe it's only important to me, but I'd always envisioned one day... because I knew about this before it was listed for sale, one day purchasing it and bringing it back to its former glory with trains and housing my own car collection there. But I don't know. Someone step in and make this a historic monument or something. Anyway. This has been Driveline. Driveline.show on Instagram. Always leave me a message, 833-3DL-SHOW. And I'll see you next week.